All right, we're on.
Okay, hi, I'm Carol B.
Hi, Carol.
And I am a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen, and I appreciate y'all asking me to speak today. You know, I did have second thoughts about when that flyer came to me, and I'm the district rep, and I've got a big distribution, and I usually send things out, and I'm like, do I really want everyone to know that I am speaking? But, of course, I sent it out, and someone said to me this morning, well, we didn't see that notice that you were speaking. And I said, well, I sent the flyer out about Bay Area Club, and they didn't go all the way down to see that it was me. Then they said, yes, we got that. So anyway, I appreciate y'all having me here today, and it really is a growth opportunity for me. And when I walked in, and it was about 4:45, I thought, you know, I think this will be okay. This is going to be more one of the more relaxed ones, because there was only about 10 people in here, and half of them had come from the Pearland group, and so I thought, and that I already know, and I appreciate y'all coming. But now I'm kind of scared. I say it's a growth opportunity for me because I always fear being vulnerable in front of other people. And Brené Brown says you can either be courageous or you can be comfortable. And so today I'm choosing to be courageous, not comfortable. I am always apprehensive about telling my story because I don't think it's very exciting. You know, I don't have a whole lot of drunkalog to it. There's probably more than I will tell today, but you know, there's some other meetings where you can probably get a lot of that. So, and you know, in reality, the fact that I feel like there wasn't a whole lot of excitement, I probably should just be grateful for that because I am grateful that. It wasn't worth, you know, the active addiction wasn't worse than it was, but it was very real to me, and Al-Anon has just kind of saved my life. But there's a reason why I like to hang around alcoholics is because they are exciting. And I definitely saw adventure and excitement in my husband when I met him, at least a lot more than was in my life, which you'll kind of find out my life is fairly boring, but... I've told my story before, but today I'm going to try to focus a little bit more on recovery, and each time, I have no idea how long it's going to last, but it's going to be 30 minutes or an hour and a half, but I'll watch the time, and when we get close to six, I'll cut it off. So, but I do want to give you some of my background, and so that you know a little bit more about where I came from, and that I really was very desperate when I found Al-Anon. Both my husband and I have now been in the programs of AA and Al-Anon, each in our separate programs, for over 7 years, and I really am grateful for that. And it's really interesting. When I first came in to the programs, heard everyone talk about being, you know, grateful Al-Anon, and I'm thinking, what is there to be grateful about? You know, I'm not here because life is great. You know, I'm here because I'm miserable and I've tried everything else and nothing else works. But now that I've been in the rooms a while, I really can understand why people are grateful. It's because, you know, I'm grateful we found recovery. And life is so different for me today, so much better. And I really am grateful. And if this is your first meeting, you really just have to keep coming back. It takes a while to absorb the concepts. And it's really more of a marathon than a sprint. But it really is a wonderful program and a great pattern to live life. But when I grew up, I felt like it was like a perfect family, nice middle class home with everything I needed. My dad worked in oil and gas. He worked for one company for over 40 years, and he felt like that's what life was about. You pretty much work till you can't work no more. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom and very devoted to us. I have two older brothers. And alcoholism did not appear to be anywhere in my family, and so I had no exposure to it, knew nothing what to expect, and I can't ever recall hearing the word Al-Anon before I got here, before my husband was in recovery. My dad was the only person in his generation to go to school, so school is very important to both him and my mom. From an early age, you know, school was important, but church was a close second, if not right up there. We went to church at least three times a week. They're very obsessive about it. My dad, he kind of just went through the motions, didn't necessarily practice all that at home. And looking back, my dad's behavior was very controlling. He needed everything to be perfect. Otherwise, he would criticize and sometimes rage. And of course, I learned those behaviors. That's what I was around, so that's kind of what I learned. My parents grew up in the Depression era, and they really overanalyzed any decision that had to do with money. It's funny, their mentality was, it's better to have something in new condition than to use it and wear it out. And so even to this day, I kind of enjoy, or I struggle to enjoy something without, oh my goodness, are we going to break it? Let's read the instructions. Let's be, you know, kind of like that perfection thing. But of course, we know there is no such thing as perfection. And they had a view that you'll never have enough money. No matter how much you have, you'll never have enough. So, you know, unfortunately, I kind of worry about that too. Now, you know, as things go in life, you marry someone that's the opposite, and he kind of takes care of that, but make sure that there's, you know, someone on the way other extreme. So I've gotten better about spending money, but still, it's something that I'm a little bit paranoid myself. When there's decisions about money, I get anxious, and, you know, it's difficult for me. But as I mentioned, work and having a job was very important. So at the age of 12, I had my first paper route and rode the bike with the bags on the back and, you know, sometimes carried dog food to keep the dogs from chasing me. And then, you know, went on to have other jobs. But met my husband, went to college, went to Texas A&M, and we got married just after I graduated from A&M. Just, you know, as I mentioned, I learning was always important, and I was a good student at home, and I learned the good and the bad of my family of origin traits. And it's funny, when I first came into Al-Anon, I don't know how much I'd heard about family of origin, and I thought, that stuff, you know, there's nothing wrong with me from my family of origin, but really, there is. The controlling behavior that my dad had, I really learned that, and I thought that things need to be done one way, and that was my way. You know, I've, for the most part, pretty conservative with money since I was taught, you never have enough, never will. And I was controlling and wanted to get in the middle of everything. And I can even remember when I was dating my husband, you know, maybe telling him a little too much about what to do on specific occasions. And I, you know, now looking back can see why those conversations probably didn't go so well. But when I first met my husband, I hadn't really been exposed to drinking, and I didn't really drink much until my second year of college, when I lived in the dorm and got exposure to the college dorm life and went to Yale practice, and that was always an excuse at Texas A&M to, you know, have a big party, and so I did plenty of that. But I just never really had that alcoholic trait. And I didn't really see my husband drink that much when we were dating because... you know, I didn't really see him that much. He was in Houston and I was in College Station. But I do recall him being proud of certain times when he wasn't drinking and he was focused on more healthy habits, and he was eager to share about it. And that should have been a red flag that maybe there was a problem. But, of course, I didn't get it. You know, I was young and in love. So we got married, and I continued to try to control things. My husband started, or really more likely, continued to drink quite a bit, mainly beer at that time. But because of my need to control, and we all know that never works, I was always kind of anxious and I'm sure pushy and probably just unpleasant to live with. And for the most part, my husband would be fairly passive, and then eventually you hit that breaking point and then it was ugly. And, you know, I was always looking to see what is that next thing that's going to make me happy? Is there, you know, the next shiny object? To this day, I still kind of have to be careful with that. Of course, love to shop, but, you know, realize that things are not going to make me happy. But anyway, long story short, this desire to, I love to learn new things, do new things. My husband and I like to do stuff together. We learned to sail, and... we took a three-week trip to Mexico with some friends on a sailboat, and we decided that was the bomb, and we wanted to purchase our own boat and take an extended trip ourselves on a boat. And so that's what we did. And remember, I was, you know, always paranoid about money, so we had saved some money, and we could afford to actually quit our job for a couple of years, and so we did that. We sailed our boat from Clear Lake to Florida to the Bahamas, all through the Eastern Caribbean, down to Trinidad and Venezuela. And we did that for a couple of years. And as you can only imagine, you know, the Jimmy Buffett song, "It's 5 o'clock somewhere," you know, always justified lots of drinking. So, and, you know, we're still today into boating and in a boating club. And we say it's a drinking club with a boating problem, not the other way, because, yeah, there's just a lot of drinking around boating. But cruising in the Caribbean on our sailboat, you know, every day was a holiday. That really accelerated the drinking. We were always celebrating a new anchorage, a new, you know, sunset, new afternoon. And it was, you know, probably pretty amazing that we didn't have any accidents or anything after all those times. And we have such good memories from sailing the Caribbean. Just a funny story where it should have been an indication to me that maybe there was a problem. But in preparing for cruising the Caribbean, they said, well, when you get to an island and you find something you like, you better stock up because on the next island it may not be there. And so we're in the Dominican Republic, and ooh, we like that rum. And so we thought, well, we're going to stock up on that rum. But so we, you know, made our purchase and back to the boat. But the issue was we had this big dolly, and it was stacked so high we couldn't even see over it because we were going to make sure we weren't going to run out. And so that should have been a problem, right? And we ran out of rum way too fast, I must say. So, but it became harder for my husband to function, so we decided to come back to the real world. And as he kind of made the excuse, even paradise gets boring. So we decided to come back home. And over the next 10 years, his addiction really accelerated to the point that his health was really compromised. And he had a serious addiction to alcohol where he just physically couldn't live without it. I mean, don't need to get into all the details of it, but, you know, from the minute you wake up, you gotta have it till the time you go to bed. During his active addiction, we really were nothing more than roommates. We lived under the same roof, but that was about it. I couldn't understand what was going on. You know, I'm a problem solver. I want to help. You know, had a lot of physical issues. Let's get it solved at the doctor. You know, a lot of shouting and repeating myself over and over. Do I get louder? How do I say it differently? There's got to be something that makes sense. But it really was a true definition of insanity, just repeatedly doing the same thing and expecting different results. I would continue to ask the same questions, and there's got to be an answer that makes sense. I mean, I just could not understand this behavior. You know, it just, and since I had no clue what alcoholism looked like, and there's lots more of it, but for the most part, he would hide his drinking. So there was long periods of time where I thought he wasn't drinking, and there was still this weird behavior. So, but, you know, I was in denial. I basically detached from the situation, probably didn't want to see what the truth was, and buried myself in work, really to kind of limit the pain. And I just kind of became a workaholic. And in reality, served me well, probably served us both well. I feel like if, you know, God was probably doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, if I had known, because I was so controlling and hadn't found help yet, if I had known what an alcoholic he was, you know, I don't know that we'd be married today. I would have, you know, demanded, you know, for him to stop or else. And, you know, that just doesn't work unless they're ready to stop. The final day before his sobriety date, we called an ambulance to help because we had no idea what else to do. He basically hit his rock bottom, and I think he probably hit it in the morning, and me, the workaholic, was working late on a Friday and had to just lay on the bathroom floor till I came home to help. And it's interesting. As a side, I have an example of how the medical community really does not know much about this disease. My sister-in-law, she's a doctor, and I remember my husband, just total despair on the floor. You know, what do we do? I had no idea what to do, and I thought, well, I'm going to call my sister-in-law. She's a doctor. She can tell us what to do. And she gave us some lame advice, and it's funny, later, probably a month later, she admitted she had no clue about alcoholism, and she said she must have missed that day in med school because she had never learned anything about it. And I just thought that was, you know, funny that, you know, a highly regarded doctor like her knows nothing about alcoholism. But He spent 10 days in the hospital due to his declining health, and it was all associated with alcoholism. And it's really amazing, though, when people do stop, how they can recover and get back to a healthy. It's just amazing how the body can recover. So he's very healthy today. But sometimes I wonder, why do I talk about the him going to rehab, but maybe for the newcomers, this was really important to me. When I dropped him off at rehab, there was a whole new set of boundaries we had to set. And it started with the rehab there. That rehab wasn't for him. He didn't like it. He'd go to any of them, but he wanted to come home. And, you know, I'd heard well enough. Now's the time to start those boundaries. So, you know, I said no. And I have a hard time saying no to my husband. I always have. But no, I'm not going to come pick you up. And I can remember this distinctly. It was one of the worst days of my life. I was on a business trip, and I can see it now. I'm in the Tulsa airport having this conversation with him when my boss is there. And so, no, I wouldn't come pick him up, but, well, he'd take a cab home. And I told him that, no, he couldn't come to the house. I would call the police. And that was really one of my lowest points of desperation, just trying to do the next right thing for really for both of us. And it was really interesting. The next day was a new day. We both survived. He stayed at rehab and acted like nothing had ever happened. It was such an awful day for me. I was like just agonizing over it. And I think really his big thing about that wasn't for him is he didn't want to share a room with another man. Is, you know, what I, you know, he had never done that before. And that was, but anyway, a little time, you know, helped that situation. But it's funny, you know, there's lots of situations in life where we think it's the end of the world and the other person has no clue the impact that they're having on us and they're just going about their life. And that was another example of that. But to tell you a little bit about what it's like now, once we found recovery, at the rehab program, we attended a family program. And we were told several things that we needed to attend this aftercare program there at the rehab once a week for a complete year. That we were gonna, it was gonna be like half a day on Saturday mornings for a whole year. And I thought, oh my goodness, I don't know if I can do this. Give up half a Saturday all for something that is not my problem. And so they also told me I needed to go to Al-Anon to keep him sober. Remember, this is what I heard, was that going to Al-Anon would keep him sober. And what I didn't know then was, you know, I thought this was just all awful, but that it was the beginning of a new way of life for me. Different, but a much better life for both of us. And I was so desperate for help, I was willing to do whatever they told me to do. So the main thing was they said I needed to start going to Al-Anon meetings. And I did. And in the beginning, I went to probably four or five meetings a week for the first couple of years, just kind of immersing myself in it. Of course, I bought all the books, and I was going to learn everything very quickly and learn how to keep my husband sober. That was it. Remember, they told me I was go to Al-Anon to keep him sober. And I quickly learned that Al-Anon had nothing to do with my husband, but it was learning about how I could change to help my relationships. And it wasn't just my relationship with the addict, it was all of my relationships. My coworkers, friends, other family members, and really just anyone I interact with, Al-Anon helps me with those relationships. And I was told I needed to keep the focus on myself. I heard about getting a sponsor and working the 12 steps, and oh my goodness, you know, I don't like to be vulnerable with anyone, so that sounded really scary to me. But they told me, you know, I need to get a sponsor, work the 12 steps. So I was determined my husband needed a sponsor and he was going to work the 12 steps. And that's what we needed. So, of course, at first I was so focused on, is he going to meetings? Does he have a sponsor? Is he working the 12 steps? But I learned really the hard way that I needed to worry about myself and let him work his own program. We each have to focus on ourselves, and that was the only way that we were going to get healthy. And as I mentioned, I was just terrified about asking someone, a stranger really, because I was new to the program, to be my sponsor, and even more terrified about thinking about working through those steps and sharing all that stuff, you know, intimately with another person. But in reality, it was such a wonderful experience, and it is a wonderful experience. You know, they always say you want to ask someone to be your sponsor, someone that has something that you want, that works a program that you like, that is attractive. And I had heard a lady speak at a meeting several times, and she sounded so wise, and she'd been in the program for quite a while. And so one night she was trying to get out of there, and I literally kind of just chased her down and almost tackled her and asked her to be my sponsor. And she's like, well, we can talk. We'll see how it goes, you know, kind of non-committal, like she wanted to see how committed I was to it. But it's just been a wonderful experience working the steps with her. And she made it just seem so simple. You know, all I had to do is be willing to work the steps just one at a time, and don't worry about those steps later on. You know, you think you don't want to work that step. We're just working this one today, and we're not moving on till we're done with this one. And it's amazing how the more you work those steps, then you're ready at the right time, and how it works that way. And she told me we're going to work the steps to the best of our ability. And you know, this program is like an onion. We kind of peel the layers of the onion off more and more as we grow and apply the tools of the program to our lives. And it's interesting. Even every time I tell my story, I go back and there's new things I can't believe that I didn't share before. And I think a lot of times over time we become more aware of reality, and we're more willing to accept reality over time. So, you know, we just work this program the best that we can at the time. And as we become more aware and more accepting of our life, then we get to a deeper level of the program. So it's really been a wonderful experience working with my sponsor and working the steps. And it has allowed me to experience being more vulnerable with another person and enjoying that. For whatever reason, when I, you know, growing up, I never really had really close friends. And so it's just always been hard for me to be vulnerable. I first read How Al-Anon Works, and that's an awesome book, the little blue book. And I love the slogans in that book. It really allowed me to focus on like a short, easy to remember phrase, and to help me in the very beginning. Because in the beginning, I just wanted something small to hang on to each day to help me get through the day. And some of the slogans I just wanted to mention that were very meaningful to me at that time were "Let go and let God." That allowed me to focus to not focus on the outcomes and let God handle it. I tend to, focus on my will, not God's will. I'll talk about powerlessness in a minute, but Easy Does It gave me permission to kind of take it easy and not force solutions. One day at a time meant I didn't need to project into the future about whether my husband was going to stay sober or not, but I could really just focus on doing the next right thing today. And that's something in the beginning I was so worried about, is my husband going to relapse? And, you know, today I take it one day at a time, and I don't focus on all those what ifs. Now I know I've got tools, I have people I can talk to. If that ever happens, it happens. That's, you know, many times part of recovery, and I'll survive it. The Serenity Prayer has always been big in my recovery program, meaningful for me. It reminds me that the only person I can control is myself, and I can't do a good job at that, even trying to control myself. The slogan, "How Important Is It?" that lets me realize that I don't have to be right. You know, we can all have our own opinion, and it's not worth getting into a heated discussion over something that I can't control anyway. And in the beginning, I did struggle with a concept such as higher power, but I learned to act kind of as if, and I would try baby steps, you know, one at a time. I learned what worked, what didn't work for me. And once I saw the effects of practicing the Al-Anon concepts, and I saw how they would provide relief to me, then I was really more encouraged to practice the tools more often. And of course, you know, if a little bit of something is good, a lot must be better. So yes, I can be excessive about my behaviors just like the addict can. So anyway, that encouraged me to use the tools more. And powerlessness has been a big lesson for me. As I mentioned, I really kind of learned as I was growing up, you know, the bad trait about trying to control. And, you know, it's hard at work. They pay us to solve problems. So I feel like, you know, well, I can solve problems at home too. But, you know, I have to remember that I only have control over myself. And when I'm trying to control, it really only hurts me. I really have no control over other people, places, or things. And, you know, that powerlessness, it helps me to not be fixated on outcomes. And that, I really have a hard time with that, fixating on this is the outcome that I believe should happen. And it drives me and everyone around me crazy. And I really just have to turn to my higher power and ask him to show me his will, not mine. And as part of that, I've learned to be happy in the moment. And yeah, sometimes I have to remind myself of these things, but to be happy with where I am today, happy with what I have. You know, there's no new shiny object that's going to change my happiness, but I still like to shop. Amazon Prime shows up a little too much at the house. You know, and be happy with our journey. I can have goals, and we all probably have goals we're working towards, but if there's a fork in the road, you know, not fight it so much, go with the flow. You know, sometimes there is a situation that I'm not happy about, and typically on the other side, I've learned, you know, you just have to feel your feelings at that time. We all have feelings, get upset, but then I have to give it up to my higher power and trust that everything's going to work out. And not try to just fight it and swim, you know, upstream. Because I can get so fixated on an outcome that I forget that there may be a better way. And if I focus on my higher power's will for me more than I'm focused on an outcome, then I'm open to different paths. And many times those other paths are something that's much better than I would have picked for myself. And just kind of a little example of that, there's a situation at work where my job may actually be ending this year, and my first reaction is just, not good. And after I kind of let things settle a little bit, I realized, you know, this really may be God doing for me what I can't do for myself. I have a hard time in life, and I'm like just pedaling so hard that I don't step back and look and determine when I need to make adjustments. And instead just kind of keep forcing what I'm doing to just keep on doing that. And, you know, we really have to rely on our higher power and be receptive to what he, what his plan is for us. Al-Anon has had such a positive impact on my life, in all areas of my life. And so I thought maybe I'd talk about the different areas of my life and how I've applied the Al-Anon principles. And first and foremost, my spouse is the reason why I found this program. And again, I am really grateful. But when my husband first got sober, our relationship actually got worse before it got better. We had to adjust to a new rhythm of life with him attending AA meetings every night. And he still goes to quite a few meetings. But now all of a sudden he had an opinion. You know, when he was in his addiction, he was afraid to talk, didn't have any input. And I got to make all the decisions, and I was happy with that. But now when they get sober, all of a sudden, they want to have some input on things. And so then we got to learn to communicate. And communication was something we had never learned before I got into these programs. Yeah, we've gotten a lot better out of it. We still have to work at it every day. You know, I've learned that I don't have to be right. I try to remember, do I want to be right or want to be happy? And yeah, I want to be both. But in reality, it's better to be happy. And, I've learned that everyone has a right to their own opinion. And we don't have to agree, but everyone gets a voice. You know, kind of like in Al-Anon, we have a group conscience. Everyone gets to state, their thoughts. But in the end, we're going to make a decision and then we're all going to go with it. We all have different perspectives, and I kind of forget that. You know, we all have different backgrounds, and so it doesn't mean that I'm right and you're wrong. It's just that, we come from different places, and we can agree to disagree. And so, we do that today, is we don't have to agree on everything. When I am struggling with, the fact that I want to be right, or is there a right and wrong, I can always say, you may be right. Even when I think there's no clue they're right. But, sometimes you just have to find the words to kind of shut down the conversation. You may be right. And, of course, you don't say it like I just did. But I've also learned about when are good times and bad times for us to communicate. I'm not a morning person, and we're both tired in the evening. So, early when I'm hungry or haven't, done my first things, that's not a good time to talk. And after 9, when we're exhausted, that's not a good time to talk. And you hear halt in here when we're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And I don't know how, somewhere in there I need to add when I need to go to the bathroom. But those are not good times to talk either. Because usually we're not in a good place. And I know for myself, when I'm not in a good spiritual place, then it's best to delay the conversation to another time. And we've also agreed that if one of us says, now's not a good time, and we call it a moratorium, if someone calls a moratorium and says, no, we need to talk about this later, I have to respect that. And in the past, I would have been right in his face, no, we're going to talk about it now, we're going to solve this now, you know, you just... you know, in his face kind of thing. And but that's not respectful. And we've agreed on that. You know, Russ and I, we do go to another meeting here. It's a couples meeting. And we've learned some great tools in there. And one of the things is that we've put in place contracts that cover various areas of our life. And basically, these contracts are more like boundaries that we've both acknowledged and agree on for certain areas. And for example, we developed a fair fighting contract so that we can both be comfortable that we can disagree in a safe environment. And on finances, we've agreed that, you know, there's a certain amount, if we're gonna spend over that, then we're gonna consult with each other. And that is one that we have to revisit quite often, because that's a hard one for us to follow. But we also make time to spend time together, you know, on activities that we enjoy. We're both very independent, but then we make sure that we're spending time together too with our hobbies. We still like to boat, camp, motorcycle, so we make sure to make time for that. And then we like to have goals that we're working towards together. You know, sometimes some goals aren't that exciting about, you know, whether it's trying to eat more healthy or have some financial goals, but then there's things like vacations that we make a point of, let's plan that out this year so that we can make sure that we spend time together. And it's interesting, my husband, being in AA, he will tell me repeatedly how appreciative he is of me being in Al-Anon and how much that has helped our relationship and the fact that I'm working on myself in my recovery program. So, you know, really, I feel like for us to be in as good a place as we are, it's helpful that both of us are working our programs. Another area where I get to practice my program and have many opportunities to work it is at work. You know, I'm learning to let everyone have an opinion and listen to them because, it's, you know, sometimes we actually learn something from other people. And definitely we have to practice principles over personalities at work because, you know, we didn't necessarily choose those people. And we, you know, don't have a choice of who we're interacting with there. And, you know, different people have different perspectives. And it's amazing that sometimes they actually can come up with a better idea than me. Because, you know, I think I'm right. But one of the acronyms that is useful at work is QTIP, Quit Taking It Personal. And, you know, many times I think it's all about me. And we all know we're not the only ones with dysfunction. Most people have dysfunction in their families, and they have their own dysfunction at home that drives their own crazy behavior. So, you know, don't think it's always about you. And I also, at work sometimes, just have to be gentle with myself also and not beat myself up and just remind myself that, you know, I'm doing the best I can. Family is another area where I get to practice my program, and I've got elderly parents. My dad passed away late last year, but you know, it's always a challenge when you have siblings that you're trying to coordinate with on healthcare with aging parents, and that's really been a big area for me to practice my program. It'd be so easy to get wrapped up in all the faults of you know, the way one person is choosing to do it. And there is no perfect solution. I also see in my family members that don't have a program how they are just off the rails and, you know, can be so controlling and blaming others and being so judgmental. And that gives me a chance to detach with love when appropriate and just, you know, not engage or encourage that crazy behavior. And it's amazing when people are getting that crazy behavior and you don't engage, how much the that situation, you can diffuse the situation, and how they're looking for a fight. They want someone to grab that rope. And when you don't, you know, it's kind of disappointing to them, and they kind of, it's not as much fun. They kind of give up a little bit. It also, you know, for me, you know, it's given me a chance to focus more on myself, and then also to think before I speak. And, you know, the longer you're in the program, you can kind of step back a little bit and think about practicing the program before you jump right in and you're just reactionary. And, you know, it didn't happen immediately, and sometimes, you know, I'm too emotional and I struggle to do that. But there's other times when, you know, I let the program kick in and I just sit for a minute and I, you know, don't feel the need to just react immediately. And that's when I can respond much better and practice the program and, again, kind of help diffuse the situation. But, you know, in recovery, everything isn't a bed of roses. Isn't always. And I am very fortunate that my husband is in recovery. But at 90, my dad was starting to get kicked out of nursing homes due to his unacceptable behavior. And which I then kind of came to realize that behavior had probably been a part of his life a lot longer than I knew. And I really was in shock that my dad wasn't who I thought he was, and that you know, my mom had to endure that disrespectful behavior, even though that's her choice, and you know, really realized how much in denial she is over it. And you know, that's probably another family of origin trait that I picked up, was denial, her denial. But I had to go back and practice step one and really admit that I was powerless over the situation with my dad and turn it over to my higher power. I really had to forgive him and realize he was doing the best with what he knows. He had been abused as a child, and I'm sure that kind of contributed to his dysfunctional behaviors. And, you know, he never got the help that he needed. He probably never knew where to go, may not have even, you know, accepted that it was a problem. But that was really a hard lesson for me in loving someone, but not their behaviors. And that's one of the things that we hear in Al-Anon, is you can love, you know, the person in addiction or anyone really, but you don't have to love their behaviors. And so we don't have to stop loving the people that maybe aren't doing things that we like. You know, I also get to use the tools of Al-Anon with friends. You know, now I try not to solve other people's problems. And that's one thing about Al-Anon, is we don't give advice. We can share our experience, but if we give advice, the risk is that the situation is going to turn out differently for them than it would for us. And, you know, we don't want to bear that burden of that not working out for that person. You know, we can share our experience and explain, you know, how we all have choices, but I let my friends make their own decisions. With the help of their higher power. And before Al-Anon, I had all the answers, and I was right. You just needed to do X, Y, and Z. And now I can give others the dignity to make their own choices and have their own outcomes. I was telling Lisa, when I get to talking, after a while I'll start coughing. Apologize. Al-Anon's also helped me deal a lot with myself. I try to have more compassion for others, and, you know, the phrase, "But for the grace of God, there go I." And I really, there's a couple of phrases up here I really like, the "But for the grace of God," and then I think it says "Expect a miracle," and those are so appropriate in all these recovery programs. But when I came in here, I was just so embarrassed that I had to admit that my spouse was an alcoholic. You know, I think I had in my head that an alcoholic lives under a bridge. I'm not sure exactly what I thought. But due to his absence at that first holiday family celebration, because he went into the hospital right around Thanksgiving, it wasn't something I could hide from. It's not like, you know, I couldn't make something up. It was obvious that he wasn't there. So it's really been humbling for me to realize, you know, we all have issues we're dealing with. And I really am more similar to you than I am different. And, you know, it's amazing. All families have dysfunction of one form or the other. It's just that, you know, people feel like they need to hide it. And I realize now that this is my life here in recovery, and I now have a much better life, really because of alcoholism, you know, while learning to be honest with myself. If it wasn't for the alcoholism, I would never have come into these rooms, and I would still be that controlling, miserable person. So it really is a much better life here. In fact, one of my family members told me that how lucky I was that I got to deal with alcoholism. And basically he was saying that, you know, it was something that we ended up having to face out in the open, and that, you know, there's issues in his family that aren't acknowledged, aren't discussed. And so this thing sometimes can just linger for lifetimes and go from, you know, one generation to the next without being dealt with. And I've learned to better accept myself. As I was growing up, I had two older brothers, and I always felt like my parents were comparing me to my older brothers when I was growing up. And so I still, to this day, at times, feel the need to, you know, to seek my parents' approval on things. I know that sounds silly now at 50, but, you know, I've had to learn to love myself the way I am. And that's a lot about the 12 steps, is learning to love yourself and working through the good and the bad traits. And, and you know, during when you work the 12 steps, you know, you ask your higher power to help him remove our shortcomings. And in time, in God's time, you know, those things will fade. And awareness of my character defects was a great part of the 12 steps. You know, it's not something that I guess we like to admit, but I think we probably, you know, deep down we know what they are. One of the, some of the phrases are these three words I like in Al-Anon are the three A's. Awareness, acceptance, and action. And, you know, to take action, to change something, you really have got to accept it. And before you can accept something, you have to be aware of it. It's the longer I'm in Al-Anon, the more willing I am to accept, you know, where I'm at. And again, you kind of have to accept it before you can change things. And that's also played a large part in lots of different areas of my life, the three A's. But one example is how it's improved communication with my husband and I. And it really started with, you know, I had to be aware and accept the disrespectful behavior that we had in our relationship and really the desire to improve it. And I think, really, I didn't want to accept the way I was treating him because I didn't like it. And if I saw that in someone else, I would have, you know, thought, oh, that's awful. But for me, it was hard to accept that. You know, all change takes time. And as we learn in Al-Anon, it's progress, not perfection. And hold on, I've kind of lost my spot here. And so, you know, I try to remind myself all the time that, you know, we can start over at any moment, any day. And sometimes my husband and I will even say that out loud. But you know, if you're having a bad day, you know, you can just decide right now, oh, it's going to be a good day from here on out. It's just a, you know, change of the mindset. I still struggle with money. It's funny how I can agonize over certain expenditures, but that's just something that I have to have a better balance on in my life. I grew up with this kind of obsessive mentality with my parents, almost kind of like a hoarding mentality, and it translates to food, which is kind of odd. Like if you find a good deal, you better stock up because you know, you're saving money and you're going to eat it at some point. And so, you know, I find I got to go through my pantry and the closets from time to time and look and throw all that stuff away, all that stuff with the expired dates on it. And you'd think if I know that I'm going to end up throwing that away, why would I buy it? But it was on sale. but before Al-Anon, I've mentioned little bit materialistic, you know, look to material things to make myself happy. And I still have to kind of catch myself with that and not think that stuff is going to make me happy. And I mentioned, you know, I try to be happy where I'm at today. You know, there's no thing or person that's going to make me happy. I'm the one responsible for my happiness. And really, I've also realized that being in a good spiritual space is much more important than anything materialistic. You know, I try to focus on myself also and know what I need to do for myself to have a good day. And, you know, this came with trial and error, you know, finding a daily routine that works for me. That's a big part of Al-Anon also is taking care of ourself. But for me, I find, you know, I need to read daily meditations from Al-Anon, the one day at a time, encouraged to change. It really helps me focus one day at a time on myself. And usually, you know, there may be one little sentence, one little phrase, just a couple of words out of those meditations that really stick to me and that I can think about, okay, how am I going to apply this during the day? And when things get crazy, you know, it's helpful to have something to focus on. I also find that, you know, I'm not great about it, but exercise really helps me with my mood and my attitude. And believe me, everyone around me is thankful when I exercise because I can get kind of grumpy when I don't. Another thing that I do is journaling and including gratitude lists. And gratitude lists cannot be overestimated in the benefits they provide. They really can help you kind of change your perspective. It can be, you know, a crappy day, but if you can write down, you know, 3 to 4 things that you're grateful for, it's hard to kind of walk away and be negative. And, you know, sometimes in the beginning when you're just starting the gratitude, it may be hard to come up with some things, and it may just be really simple, you know, things about a roof over your head. But practicing, you know, using a gratitude list is really helpful in kind of setting the tone to have a good attitude. And I also like to, when I have time, plan my day on what am I going to get done, because it is so easy to for other people to kind of take over and tell us what they want us to do and take over our time. And so it's important to make sure that you have time for yourself. And I also, I like to continue to read and learn, you know, not only in Al-Anon, but in other areas. And, you know, for the most part, these are all things that I'm just doing to take care of myself. And it's different for everyone. Everyone has to figure out, you know, what qualifies as taking care of myself. But it's important to do that. One other area that I wanted to talk about before I close is service work. And that has really been critical to my recovery. I probably came to meetings maybe for a year before I got too involved in service, but you can get involved on day one. And, you know, as you know from the Al-Anon preamble, we talk about service, that there's many forms of service. Not only is it group positions or sponsoring, it's even just sharing at meetings or talking to folks, you know, in between meetings. And you know how it goes. You know, you ask, what does a GR do? I asked what a GR does, and they said you'd make a great one. And I think it was Tammy that was a GR at the time and said, Carol, you'd make a great one. So when that position was open, I became the new GR. And then later, when the district rep position became open, I don't know what possessed me, but anyway, I threw my name in, and now I'm the GR. So, and elections are coming up in September, and you should all think about coming to the district meeting and getting more involved. So we'd love to have you get more involved. But, you know, for me, the reason why I like service is it's kept me coming back. You know, it's too easy, I think, sometimes to say, I'm not sure I want to go to the meeting tonight. And the service really helps me stay committed and keep coming. But then also, I want the program to be here for others like it was here for me. You know, I was such a point of need when I came in here. And, you know, I want it to continue to be here for those in the future. Service work also has allowed me to learn so much more about the Al-Anon organization. And what all, like the district, the intergroup, the area, the World Service does for us. And they do a lot to keep Al-Anon going. You know, they help us with the websites, with all the literature, and even they've got the phone number that people can call and find meetings and just talk to someone. So I would encourage everyone, if you can, to participate in service, for nothing else, for gratitude for what you've gotten out of the program. I really feel like I'm in a good place today, and it's not because my husband isn't drinking, but, you know, regardless of what he's doing, you know, I know how to take care of myself, and I know where I can find people to talk to. I know what to do to take care of myself, and I've got all these tools of the program that are just marvelous. And, you know, if it wasn't for Al-Anon, I would still be focused on what my husband's doing wrong and what everyone else around me's doing wrong. And, you know, I wouldn't focus on myself. And, you know, I also, Al-Anon helps me to recognize my part in, you know, when things aren't going right. In one of the recent Al-Anon daily readings, I was reminded that there's no magic pill in Al-Anon to cure my problems. Well, what Al-Anon does do for us, it really offers a pattern of living that will work for us, you know, to the extent that we work the program. And I really feel like I've experienced a miracle with the changes in myself due to practicing the principles of the program. And I've really just kind of just touched the surface. You know, I've been in the program now 7 years. There's some people that I know have been in over 40 years. And I think, wow. You know, one of the things we say in this program is we never graduate because we've never learned it all. We've never conquered it. And so we say to keep coming back. And I'd also like to add with not just the keep coming back, but don't leave until the miracle happens. And I know on the podium on the other side, it says expect a miracle. And if you stay till the miracle happens, then you won't want to leave. So I appreciate y'all having me today and for sharing the time. Thanks.